Thanks for joining us on The Big Idea. I'm Michael Anderson, and today we're talking about energy, oil, energy independence for California and beyond. We have Bob Poole in the studio. It's going to be a great show, and as always, we hope to make the next 30 minutes a very good investment of your time. Today's show is brought to you by Geico Local Office. You could save up to 15%. Call Geico Local Office, 805-487-7847. Welcome to the program. Today we're going to be talking about energy and oil, and we have Bob Poole. He's the director of Western States Petroleum Association. He's been a resident here in the Central Coast since 1975, and in a prior career, he also served as the president and CEO of both the Goleta Valley and Solvang California Chambers of Commerce, also a former small business owner. He was a graduate of UC Santa Barbara and also got a Master's of Science in Environmental Management from the University of Maryland. He has three grown children and granddaughters, lives in Santa Paula, California. Bob, thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here and talk about energy.
We've got a big topic today, and energy, of course, for California. I mean, when you hear energy, when you hear oil, a lot of people, they start to get stirred up about it because sometimes there's negative press, sometimes there's misinformation. And I think it's great that we're going to be able to talk about just some things in our history and some things going on with energy in California. I want to start with the history of oil here in Ventura County, in Santa Paula. Give us the background of what that looks like.
Well, thanks, Michael. It's a long history. It started in the late 1800s. As a matter of fact, the Union Oil was one of the first major oil companies actually to begin work here. Their original headquarters is in Santa Paula. It's now the California Oil Museum. That was very instrumental in the development of oil all over California. There's lots of oil in California, as a matter of fact, both onshore and offshore. A big history of it in Santa Barbara County, Ventura County, Los Angeles County, Monterey County, and the biggest amount of oil is obviously in Kern County.
So there's been a long history of oil in Ventura County and in California. Tell us about the museum in Santa Paula. I think it's important to talk about that as well.
Well, the California Oil Museum in Santa Paula is actually, it once was the original headquarters for Union Oil. So it was a natural to then take on and carry the historical remembrance and the long tradition of oil in California. California used to be, and not too long ago, the third largest producer of oil in the United States. It has since dropped to, I think, seventh. And there are a lot of reasons for that. But the point is there's been a lot of oil production, both onshore and offshore, in California since the late 1800s. And it continues to this day.
So with oil, and with other types of energy, a lot of people will say, hey, I'm seeing more energy efficient cars, or that I want a car that doesn't use oil, or I want a wind power, or I want solar on my house. People start to think that there are so many options here. And I want to talk about that first, the idea that the energy consumption, some people think, oh, do we need all the oil that we're getting? You know, is there really that need for oil that we have? And it seems that California, we're actually running a deficit for the oil that we're producing, but also the oil that we're using. Can you speak to that deficit we have in California for energy consumption and supply?
Yes, I can. But first, what I'd like to tell you is to kind of put a frame around it on the front end of what you were talking about. And that is that currently we're using 20-some million barrels of oil in the United States every day. And the federal government, the Energy Information Administration, which is a great resource, by the way, for energy, says that we're still going to be using petroleum for 80% of our transportation needs all the way through 2040. So while all of the other sources of energy are helping and they're coming along in leaps and bounds, and an all of the above approach to energy is an excellent one, the fact remains petroleum's going to be with us for a long time. And it's not just to fuel our engines. Virtually everything in society is either made from or a machine that runs on oil makes it. It's just amazing all the things that. So we truly are a petroleum-based carbon economy, and we need to be mindful of that going forward. Now, getting back to your question about California, Californians use almost 2 million barrels of oil a day. We're clearly about the 10th of the size of the United States in population to begin with, so that's not surprising. But almost 2 million barrels, and we only produce here about 30% of that. So we're importing every day from overseas in tankers over 1 million barrels a day. our former governor, Governor Brown, he observed this. He mentioned that what we're doing by not producing the oil we have here, and we do have lots more oil we could produce here, both onshore and offshore, we're actually creating environmental impacts elsewhere where they don't have things like CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. So from an environmental perspective, we need to bridge that gap from the 30% that we're producing to the 100% that we're using. That's the best thing we can do for our environment.
I know in the history, though, it wasn't this bad. Like we were in terms of that. So we didn't have to, like, what was it, 20 years ago, we were only importing 50%. Now we're importing 70. So to your point, why has it gone that way?
Well, clearly, I think it has to do with politics, and it has to do with the politics of energy, and it has to do with the focus on the incentive to move to other forms of energy. And so you have, the public concern around this whole dynamic has continued to increase. It's harder to get projects approved, even though the regulatory framework, CEQA and the rest of it, has continued to keep up and actually improve as we've gone along, implementing new technologies to further reduce the footprint, to further reduce the emissions, all of those things, to where we are clearly able to produce the oil in California in the cleanest, most environmentally sensitive way on the planet, and yet folks aren't kind of keying into that, and yeah. So we're still importing that million barrels plus a day.
I guess what I'm trying to ask, if we look at it like a pendulum, and we say, you know, back 100 years ago, there were no regulations, and maybe that was too much. And now it sounds like you're saying there are too many regulations.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Okay.
The oil companies are very good, very smart, and able to produce the resources within the regulatory framework. We're not asking for less stringent regulations by far. We're asking to have these projects approved so that we can produce that oil under these most stringent regulations.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a fair distinction there. One thing I think I want to talk about here, I found a nice piece of information, and it talks about U.S. energy consumption, and it talks about the billion BTUs. So one BTU, the British thermal unit, being one BTU, being like one match that you light. But as far as U.S. energy consumption, it says that we use somewhere around, and this is billions, 5 million billion BTUs. That's a huge number.
That's a big number. But is that a gazillion?
I know. So, but think of it this way. We'll reduce a few of those zeros, and we'll just say, imagine that there's 5,000 marbles sitting in a wheelbarrow, and each of those represent like a billion plus BTUs, okay? And that's what we use as far as energy in the United States, 5,000. Well, of those, and there's a number of sources here, so solar would be 3 of the 5,000. Geothermal would be 5 of the 5,000. Biofuels would be 50 marbles out of the 5,000. Wind would be 60 of those marbles out of the 5,000. Hydroelectric is 120. Nuclear is close to 400 of the 5,000. But then when you get into the final, the big three here, coal has 1,000 of the 5,000. Natural gas has 1,500 of the 5,000 marbles there. And then crude oil has somewhere around 1,600 of the 5,000 marbles. So the large majority of consumption in America for the energy we use is still crude oil, natural gas, and coal.
Over 80%. I don't know how many marbles that is, but over 80% of our energy currently and projected, with a 12% increase in demand, projected to still be 80% in 2040, which was, I was talking about that earlier. So that's a reality that we need to understand. Regardless of what we want, we're making great strides in solar and wind and all these other things, but the significance, the scale, the enormous nature of the challenge we face is such that we can't say no to one thing, the primary thing that is actually undergirding our entire economy, our entire society, to assume that we're going to be able to utilize these other sources, that they're going to come in tomorrow. I like to say, at the risk of sounding flippant, we're not going to be flying around in solar planes on Monday. It's just not going to happen. And so that needs to temper the body politic. So when we're out there, when you're out there and there's a project, a local project in Ventura County, for example, the conversation needs to include the awareness that by saying no to that project under CEQA, like I said before, the most stringent regulations, what we're saying is we're saying yes to another barrel coming in from places like Saudi Arabia. California, the imported oil from that California imports, over 30% of it comes from Saudi Arabia. Now, we know that these countries have questionable human rights issues. We know they don't have CEQA. This is a no-brainer. So why aren't we, the best thing we can do for our climate, for our planet, our economy, the environment in general, is to stop importing this foreign oil into California. California has no pipelines bringing crude oil into us. We're an energy island. So every day, both in the South Coast and in the Bay Area, that's where all the refineries are. They're right on the ocean. These super tankers are coming in and they're bringing in the crude. That's insane on some level if you're talking about trying to maximize the opportunity of providing our energy and doing it in the most environmentally sensitive way.
So it sounds like there's the need for oil. That's not going away. Like we
use
it.
Point.
The need's not going away.
Right.
So where are we going to get it? We could just produce it right here. Or we could, we're going to use it because
that's
we need
the point.
It.
We're going to use it. It's not going to not be used. We're making great strides in energy conservation, mileage on vehicles, you know, emission controls. We're making great strides. Why aren't we utilizing that success as much as we can?
So talk to me then about the political landscape here. Then why is that something, you know, it sounds pretty clear the way you talk about it. Why is this becoming an issue that it's not happening?
Well, I don't think it's becoming an issue. It's been an issue, and it's gradually continued to be ratcheted up. And quite honestly, we in the industry, we want to have this conversation. The only way that we're going to be able to we all have a shared future. We're all in this together. And the decisions we make are going to affect all of us going forward. So why can't we sit down? Let's sit down and have this conversation. Everybody should have a seat at the table. But the bottom line is we need to have an open mind to understand the facts. We can't just have the perceptions or the decision that something is bad without understanding what the unintended consequences are. In this case, barrel you don't produce here comes from overseas. What's that look like? What are the impacts of that if you make that decision? Just last night, I was at a environmental impact report hearing for one of the major oil companies trying to get a project approved in Santa Barbara County. And the county came out with saying the no project alternative, which is a term in CEQA, was the best project alternative. And I had a similar conversation to what we're having right now. I said, now, wait a minute. The no project alternative means that we're going to continue to import more oil. So you need to analyze the fact that your recommendation really has significant environmental impacts, much greater than the ones that the company is going to want to produce that oil under CEQA. So we're continuing to try to have that conversation. Bottom line is we need to all sit down. We need to put our extreme hyperboles aside, and we need to have a real conversation about the facts and try to make some reasoned decisions. And I think that's what we're focused on, that shared future and trying to ask questions. We all share the same concerns about the environment. I know the oil companies are vilified, that we don't care about the environment. That is just not true. We are doing more on a day-to-day basis for the environment than virtually anybody else in the sense that we have the opportunity through producing that energy to produce it in the most environmentally sensitive way.
So when you say sit at the table, who needs to be at the table?
Everybody. Everybody.
We've got stakeholders from all
areas.
Yeah,
the word stakeholder, I think, is a broad term that really is inclusive in the sense that whoever wants to be at the table. But primarily those folks who are on a day-to-day basis advocating that we'd stop oil using oil today, tomorrow, whenever, in the near future. Those folks are the ones primarily that we all, society, needs to have a conversation with to help them understand some of these other realities. And let's fold those into the conversation. Let's expand the conversation.
So let me dig into that for a second. So some people will say, well, there was a oil spill a few years ago out off of a pipeline, and there were some animals that were damaged and it impacted the area. And then, so they might say, well, that's bad. So we need to stop doing that because that's bad. You know, and are they being short-sighted and just going to that quick snap judgment response? Or, I mean, how should they look at that, you know, as far as that goes? Because the other side of that, to kind of answer my own question a little bit, I've heard other people say, if we stop pumping and when we do offshore, the seepage, the oil's still there. It's still coming up. It's still impacting the environment, but it's in a different way.
Yeah, I'll address that in just a minute. But your first question is, that we live in a risk-based world. Airplanes fall out of the sky. Our objective with the oil industry is zero mishaps every day. So we do the best we can. And sometimes there are accidents. Those accidents get cleaned up and we move on and we do it in a way that we try to minimize, we try to learn from it, and we try to go forward. But to say that you need to stop producing oil because you have a technical accident, if you will, and then import more. You know, there's almost 40,000 barrels of oil, and I'll get to the seepage thing in this context. There are almost 40,000 barrels of oil that have been stopped being produced because of that Plains pipeline rupture you're referring to back in 2015. Well, where are those 40,000 barrels per day coming from? Overseas. Now Plains is going to fix that pipeline, or they have a proposal to put a new one in that's smaller and that has more bells and whistles. So we need to look at that approach to it, managing risk in the society. We drive cars every day. We get I don't want to belittle or minimize the potential impact of some of these things, but at the end of the day, there's no guarantees in modern society. We live in a very highly evolved, very sophisticated world, and so we have to manage that risk. Getting back to the seeps, those 40,000 barrels of oil, it's a real simple way to understand it is that the oil down below the surface is there and it's trapped under the rocks. And so when you produce oil, you're reducing the pressure by reducing the amount of substance, oil in this case, that's down there. But when you stop producing it, then the seeps that are all around there where it's making its way to the surface are then re-energized. And so the seepage increases. 100 to 150 barrels a day of oil naturally seeps out of the ocean off the coast of Santa Barbara. 100 to 150 barrels. Over a million metric cubic feet of greenhouse gas. Those are important things to consider.
Is there more seepage when we're not pumping?
Yes, that's the point. There's more seepage because you're reducing the amount of pressure that you're relieving from the underground reservoir by removing the oil. And that's been documented by UCSB. They've done a longitudinal study from 1975 to the 90s where they tracked those seepage and they paralleled it to the production of oil, primarily off Platform Holly, which sits about 2 miles off. Platform Holly is being shuttered because Venoco filed bankruptcy, in large part because of the shut-in because of the Plains pipeline. All that oil is now not being taken out, and so the seeps are increasing.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, in some ways, as you're sharing that, you know, background, it kind of makes me think of, like, you know, I have a 3-year-old son. You know, if he give him a cup of milk and if he spills it, you know, the response is like, hey, you don't drink milk anymore. There's no more milk for you.
Right.
You know, it's like that wouldn't be the proper response, you know, but it's hard to pair that with, you know, and I'll just the other side of it too. Like some people say, well, there was some accident that happened and there's a little bit of oil that was coming down just a year or two ago, one of the hillsides in Ventura. And so it puts people up in arms. Are they wrong and think like, hey, we need to, like, what should they be thinking?
No, they're not wrong. They're not wrong. They're having experience and it's as valid as any other. The point is to get to the conclusion of the reaction or what motivates the reaction.
Right.
We need to temper that with a little bit more of an awareness of a broader dynamic here. As I said, we live in a risk-based society. We go to work every day to try to produce the energy that our country needs, that our state needs, that Ventura County needs, in the safest way possible. When on those rare occasions when there is an incident, we try to learn from it, we try to minimize it, we try to clean it up, and we go forward. But to jump to the conclusion that we just need to stop, it's getting back to your son and his milk. Okay, he spills the milk and you say he can't drink any milk. Well, that means somebody else is going to be spilling milk somewhere else, overseas, right?
Right, right, right.
That's the bottom line. So all we're suggesting is this is a much more important conversation than what's currently being had. There's a polarization out there. They're just saying stop oil, and we're saying, wait a minute, we're producing it in the most environmentally sensitive way possible, and if we don't, you're still going to want it because it's doing everything in society. It's not just fueling cars. Car transportation is just one small part of the conversation. Virtually everything in one way, shape, or form in modern society is made possible. I like to use the example of the Apple phone. Everybody's got one, right? I mean, I have a Galaxy, but everyone mostly has an iPhone. That thing wouldn't exist without petroleum. I mean, that's just one example. Silicon Valley wouldn't exist without petroleum. So we really need to look at all of this and understand what that, and so that will inform our conversation. Hopefully that'll move us more to where we can gain some common ground. And that's really what this is about. How can we have a civil conversation to gain common ground because we share the same future?
I think that's important. I think it, you know, to again touch on my son spilling the milk, like I'm not going to let the milk go bad in the fridge. Like I'm going to go drink it, or I'm going to let the neighbor kids have some or whatever. It's just not going to go bad. It's not going to go. So it's going to be consumed somewhere. You know,
right.
There is a need. There will be also a need for it somewhere. So,
well, you know, that's a good point. And two quick points, if I might. One, in the Los Angeles Times not too long ago, there was an observation that 25% of the air pollution in the L.A. basin comes directly from China. Well, that intrigued me. I went online. I found some information from JPL. They have a satellite photo of that pollution cloud hitting the coast of California. So China, and not to vilify China, but China is a country that has different environmental regs. So here we are, and I kind of liken it to Don Quixote, you know, the story of him. He was riding around trying to battle windmills thinking they were dragons, right? Well, here we are in California trying to shut off the best production of oil possible, and instead the pollution's blowing in here from elsewhere. It's a global issue. So, you know, it's really important that we start to understand when we make a decision one way, it has unintended consequences the other way.
We're talking with Bob Poole. He's the director of Western States Petroleum Association. They have their museum in Santa Paula. And we're talking about energy, energy independence, oil, the oil industry. And there's a lot to be said with this, Bob. You know, I'm enjoying the topics that you're kind of highlighting. And I think in future shows on this program, we've talked about, you know, some issues and divisiveness in communities and how today, maybe more so than ever before, we're experiencing some forms of like tribalism. It's either like I'm in this group or I'm in that group. And if I'm in a group that just doesn't like oil, then it's hard, you know, there's almost a blind spot to understand that oil is needed and used in other ways. And so it's not that oil is the enemy, or it's not that. I think the way that we get beyond that is to think deeper on the issues, not just on the surface themselves.
Very good point. And I think if you use the tribal analogy, the tribal leaders need to lead that discussion, because the tribal leaders are the ones who have been leading the discussion so far. And, you know, and the other point I wanted to make, by the way, a lot of the conversations about water. Water is a lifeblood. And there's a lot of misinformation out there about water, about the oil companies are polluting the water. It's just not true. There's first off, most of the oil in California is in what's called marine sediments. It was laid down back when there were primordial seas here, and it was trapped with the sand. You know that little experiment where you have a glass of sand and you pour water in it and the water disappears? Well, that's effectively what happened millions of years ago with all the little plants and animals that were in the oceans that covered this whole area, including all the way to Bakersfield. And so when that carbon matter, those plants and animals died, their little bodies went down to the carbon matter went down to the bottom in the sand. And over time, it got mixed in, but there was water, ancient seawater in there. And so what we're doing is we actually should be more aptly referred to as water companies. For every barrel of oil in California we produce on average 15 barrels of water. Now that water's not drinking water. It's not groundwater. It's not the water we would use. It's brackish ancient seawater. And so for the most part, now we can clean some of it up to a point where it's acceptable for agriculture and we're using it to grow some of our food, but that water would not necessarily be available. Groundwater, the water we use to drink and everything else, that's roughly on the surface of the planet, a couple hundred feet down. We're talking about thousands of feet down, this brackish seawater that's mixed with this carbon matter is coming up. There's a whole host of regulations that keep that separated. We don't want oil to get in the water, the groundwater. A whole bunch of regulations, and yet you would think, listening to the folks who come out and advocate against projects, that we're polluting the groundwater. It's just not true. There's no evidence of that. There are separate situations. We're putting that produced water back down where we got it. You know, so that's a conversation that I think is very prominent right now that is being used to support not producing oil, and yet it's full of misinformation.
And that's what's interesting nowadays about the conversation is information. You know, it's like, where do we get good information? It's harder and harder to find quality information because we're in an era where now where information is kind of readily available in so many different sources,
right.
So many different people and can be their own journalists and put information out there, and it's hard to gather good information. This is definitely a challenge. We're running to the end of our time today. I'll give you the final word before we close out.
Well, thank you. Again, I just want to reinforce that we need to have a civil conversation, all of us. We all need a seat at the table. Let's take a seat, and we have a shared future, and the outcomes are going to either happen one way or the other. So why don't we make decisions based on the proper information?
Our featured guest today is Bob Poole. He is the director, Western States Petroleum Association, and you can get information at their website, which is WSPA.org. Bob, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Michael.
Well, that does it for our show today. A big thank you to our sponsors, Boyd & Associates, the largest family-owned security company in Southern California, established in 1967. For your home and business security needs, visit BoydSecurity.com, or you can call them at 805-650-3267, Boyd Security. Also, a special thanks to our sponsor, Era Energy, powered by safety, innovation, and community. We help keep California moving forward. And again, thank you to Geico Local Office. You can save up to 15%. Call Geico Local Office in Oxnard. Greg Mock, 805-487-7847. And that's all the time we have today. If you did like the show, please be sure to share it with a friend and find our podcast. We're on all major podcast platforms. Search for The Big Idea with Michael Anderson. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time. Are you currently being treated for type 1 or type 2 diabetes? If so, you may qualify for a clinical study at Coastal Metabolic Research Center located in Ventura. All study-related medications and glucose monitoring will be provided at no cost to you. Studies include compensation for your time and travel. Please contact 805-658-8460 for more information. That's 805-658-8460 for more information.
Do you ever question if your investments are right for you? Do you own any annuities, retirement accounts, or have other money you want help with? Have you ever wondered what your advisor is making or how they get paid? Get a free second opinion. Talk with Michael Anderson, certified financial planner. Call his answering service today, 805-665-3767. Leave a message and get a call back immediately. 805-665-3767.